Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. My guest today is Elizabeth English, whose Buddhist name is Lochana, and is the founder of Life at Work, a professional and personal development organisation. She has a master's and doctorate from Oxford University in Buddhology. She's a certified non-violent communication trainer and a teacher in focusing with the British Focusing Teachers Association and the Focusing Institute. She's going to talk to us today about focusing, what it is, how you practice it, what are its benefits, and how it might relate to the middle way. Hello, Lochana. Welcome to the MWS podcast.
Thank you very much, Barry. Yes, pleasure to be invited. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, well, could we start off by you telling us a little bit about your background and how you became involved in this field of work?
Yes, well, I've been practicing meditation for over 30 years, and that's with Buddhists. I learnt with members of the Western Buddhist Order, as it was called then. It's now called the Triratna Buddhist Order, and followed the Buddhist path, and was very, very interested, always fascinated by my inner world and what it held. I wouldn't say I was a really sort of natural meditator. It's always something I've had to work on, but I've always been very interested in what goes on in my inner world. Yeah. And then I came across focusing, and I found it absolutely transformative. And about 10, 12 years ago, I started to learn it and just continue to find it a very, very rich practice, very, very compatible with any other development practice, and certainly with my Buddhist practice. Yeah.
Okay, so what is focusing?
Well, focusing. Eugene Gendlin introduced this idea of focusing. Perhaps if I tell you a little bit about how it started, Barry, is that a good
idea, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you how it started, and I'll go on to describe what it is a little bit more in detail, how you practice it. But Gendlin was a student and then a colleague of Carl Rogers, who's, of course, one of the great fathers of psychotherapy. And they were doing a research study, and their research was, what was it that helped people to progress in therapy? Mm-hmm. So they were looking at all the different things that therapists did to help their clients progress. And they had a very broad range of people they were looking at. And when they got the results through, they were quite astounded, because what they noticed was that some of the people who were doing classically everything absolutely right in therapeutic terms, offering a wonderful session, some of their clients wouldn't seem to budge at all, didn't seem to unstick or find any way through their problems. And other therapists who were doing everything classically wrong, that, you know, wouldn't necessarily work or was not advised, and their clients would progress. Mm-hmm. And so because they noticed there was this sort of discrepancy in their expectations, they changed where they focused their attention. And they started saying, well, what is the client doing that's helping them to move forward in their inner world? And Jens then noticed that the people who were able to progress and find a way through were people who could reach a point in their exploration and then sort of stutter and run out of words. So they'd start saying things like, oh, well, you know, this is all about, it's sort of, well, it's kind of about my mother, but it's not quite, it's more also something to do with, and they start doing that, And so Gendlin was fascinated by this, and his idea, which he then develops in focusing, is that they're feeling something, they know something's there. There's a very strong, keen sense of something, some experience that they know is there, but they haven't yet got the words for it. Mm-hmm. It's like not quite formed enough for them to say exactly what it is.
It's like they can't put their finger on it, but they sense. Yeah.
That's it, absolutely, as you know it's there. And this becomes the sort of wonderful sort of magical area in the practice of focusing. Because so often I think we have a sense, oh, something's bothering me, or there's something here that I want to put my finger on or find. And actually, it's there in us. We feel it. We know it's there. So Jenson has some lovely examples of what he means. It's, I don't know if you've ever had the experience, Barry, when you've wanted to leave the house, you've left the house and you suddenly realise, oh, I've forgotten something. There's something I meant to bring with me.
Yeah.
So that's a good example. So there you are, you're sort of walking down the street and you go, oh no, something's, oh, I left that, what was it I meant to bring? Yeah. So your whole body knows it, and you'll probably sort of tense up a little bit, or your body will sort of go, it'll stop you in the street even, you know, you suddenly find yourself stopping and putting your hands in your head, what was it? And although you haven't, in that moment, you don't know what it is, you can also be incredibly precise, because if I was next to you and I said, oh, Barry, was it that you wanted to feed your cats? You'd go, no, I did the cats. And, did you want to leave a message for your partner? No, I did that. Did you phone your mum? Yeah, I phoned my mum. You know, you'd know, really. You'd have a very strong knowing, real precision. And at the same time, a real sense of something unclear and fuzzy and murky, you can't quite put your finger on it. And then when it comes to you, of course, you go, of course, that was it. And your whole body sort of relaxes and releases, and you're able to, you know, carry on walking down the street or make a plan and what you'll do to, you know, to make good. So he says that is a way of seeing it, that there's something there that you can't quite find. It's fuzzy, it's unclear. And yet within that unclear space, there's all this incredible sort of precision and knowing, and there's so much in it.
Mm. And do you think also when you've had those experiences and you've eventually been able to tap into them, that gives you a certain confidence with them that saves off frustration? Because I've had those feelings, but I know that often that if I stick with them, then it will unravel and then it will come round, as opposed to being really frustrated. And does that make any sense?
Definitely. That I think what happens in the focusing practice is you get more and more used to making room for whatever is in you, and actually to giving it huge credence. You know, so if you've got a sense of frustration or upset about something, I think as you practice, you build up a huge respect for the inner world, that it's there for a very, very good reason. And then that there's always something deeper and richer and really important inside any experience.
Okay, so that's the that was the sort of insight that Jenling got. So then what did he do? How did he develop that?
Yes, how did he develop that? So in a way, he developed this practice of what he calls focusing. Now, focusing is not about concentrating really hard and being able to, you know, always keep your mind on one thing. It's not what he means by the word focusing. In fact, he's very sweet, Jenling. He'll say, oh, it's a terrible name, I shouldn't have called it that, but then I didn't know what else to call it. So it's not, you know, it's a hard thing to name. But what he's getting at is that when you go into this space and you make contact with what's there, that's sort of semi-known, hasn't quite got words yet, to start with, it's probably a little bit unclear. And what is it that's there? What is it I'm feeling? What is this frustration about? Whatever. And as you give it space, as you give it this particular type of contact and particular kind of relationship, which I'll explain in a bit, of course, it begins to become clearer. It begins to come into focus.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he means by focusing. It's this process of coming into focus,
yeah,
of what's beyond our immediate conscious recall at any, you know, in this particular moment.
Yeah.
So shall I tell you a little bit about how you do that then, about the actual practice?
Right.
Well, all right. So you can do it with a particular issue that's bothering you. You know, it could be something about, I don't know, supposing you're having to move house or something. And you might say, OK, I've got all these funny feelings around moving house, which I haven't quite put my finger on. So you could choose an issue, or you could just go inside and begin to contact your inner world and just see what comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
So you tend to do it in a pair. You can do it by yourself, but it's particularly effective in pairs, and it's a very, very good way to learn as well, to do it in a pair. The partnership is very important because, of course, well, as Jenlin says, you know, you are interaction. We are made up of interaction, so it helps. So something magical about interaction. But the main thing is that it's about developing a relationship with oneself. So as a focuser, I'm also listening. I'm listening inside. So focusing is really a process of very, very subtle and skilled inner listening.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're there as my partner, Barry, listening as well, And maybe, you know, as you learn focusing, the partnership is very good. The listener might make lots of lovely little echoing sort of phrases and responses, which will help. But you're supporting me to listen.
Yeah.
So I'm listening. The main thing is I'm listening to myself, and you, as my listener companion, if you like, you're sort of helping me to be with whatever's in me, just because you're being with me.
Right. Okay.
Yes. It's just that. Isn't it? So the person who's focusing is very much in charge of their inner process. So that's the wonderful thing as well, is as a listener, you're just a companion. Just this. Gentleman says you don't have to be anything special. Just a sort of shaky person will do. You know, just to be with someone is what's needed, and that sort of helps and encourages the whole growth of presence and being with. For me, as the focuser.
Okay.
And also, it's easier to stay concentrated because I'll speak out loud what's going on in me, so you'd hear it,
yeah.
And that's easier for me to stay. You know, I don't drift off like I would if I was meditating, for example.
Yeah.
So I love to do it where I just go in and see what needs attention, see what's there, see what's waiting for me in my inner world. And of course, I might have definite things like my work or something that's bothering me, but I'll just see what wants to come to my attention. So I'll shut my eyes, and I'll probably be sitting or lying, you know, in some way that's comfortable. And I'll just take a moment to just sense inside me anything that's, but if you like, anything that's between me and feeling completely all right, that's a good way to put it. Is there anything there that's in between that sense of me feeling as I am now and me feeling completely all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's something will often come if you think of it in that way. But sometimes you go inside and what's there is a lovely, lovely feeling. So you can really surprise yourself, and then you just want to give that space. So the important thing in really is that you're going beyond what you already know. Anything that's familiar has already got the words. It's probably not what you're looking for. You're looking for that sort of felt sense of something there. And it's probably a combination of a body sense and an image, or a body sense and an emotion,
mm-hmm.
or perhaps an emotion and an idea. It'll have a probably a bit of a mix. So if I went in and just sort of felt sensed within, I'd be looking and saying, okay, so you might sense into your torso area. That's where often this is held. And I'd say, well, okay, I can feel something around my chest, heart area. And actually it's got a little heaviness to it, so there'd be a heavy feel. So I wouldn't be trying to put many words in it. I'd just see if the words fitted.
Mm-hmm.
And then a listener might say, okay, there's something there which has a heavy feel. I'd hear it back. You know. And that opens up a lovely process of what we call resonating. We're trying to see, does that fit? Is it a heavy feel or is it something else? Just and giving it a bit more space. So it's like we slow things down hugely. And I'd be going, well, it's not just heavy. It's also got a kind of dragging element going into my stomach. I can feel that. And as I do that, actually a bit of an image is coming to me, and I don't know why, but it's coming like a sail of a sailing ship. I've got that kind of triangular going down, sort of triangular thing into my belly, but this image of a sailing ship comes. And so you see what I mean? It's very fluid and flowing, and you just sort of follow what's coming in your inner world.
And are you normally in the same room with your co-listener, or is it often on the telephone, or...?
Oh, well, I learnt it and I did that in person with a focusing teacher, Kay Hoffman, who's a very wonderful focusing teacher in Bedfordshire. But she does a lot of work on the telephone and on Skype when she's teaching people who can join courses, you know, remotely. And it's surprising how effective that is. Having said that, I think a lot of people like to meet the teacher, and I certainly think there's something very helpful doing it in person. Nowadays, I do it mostly by phone with Kay, who's my friend and focusing teacher still after 10, 12 years.
Yeah.
But I do a lot of work remotely just because I'm busy and I'm so used to focusing, I don't, it can be just as effective that way. Yeah.
Okay, then, so what happens next?
Okay, so yes, you're in your inner world, you're discovering all these things and you're thinking, well, what's the point maybe, or something like that. And this is where, well, Jendin, of course, in his book, Focusing, very well worth reading. And he describes six beautiful steps. But he himself, he says, well, actually, every focuser does it differently. And a very wonderful teacher called Anne Weiser Cornell, she's written a book called The Power of Focusing. And again, she's got a slightly different frame. But they all have the same kind of approach, which is that you make contact with what's there in your inner world. You give it lots of space. You know, you might start by making contact and sort of saying, well, you know, how does this feel from the perspective of what's inside, or you know, what's needed here, or you know, just little sort of prompting questions, and you allow it all to flow and see what comes, and the magic is that just by being with and sort of letting it come into focus with this resonating process. Finding, Jenlyn talks about finding a handle on what it is. Ah, it's about this sort of sailing ship and this funny, you know, I was describing a funny sort of triangular feel. So you're left not really knowing what that's all about. But the fascinating thing is that as you sit with it, as you just give it presence, as you give it just this being with company, it's things begin to become a bit clearer, or your whole body begins to sort of respond. A little bit like in the example I gave you of walking down the street and realizing there's something you meant to bring, and when you suddenly realize, your whole body goes, ah, yes, of course, I meant to do such and such. So I can give you some lovely little examples from my experience. Shall I share a couple of little insights that I had in okay, because again, it just illustrates the complete magic of the mind and how wonderful, you know, the inner world is, how much it holds. So I was doing some focusing several years ago, and I never forgot this. I was having a particularly difficult time with a particular relationship, and it was often with me. And I did this focusing session, and I was sort of deep in there trying to understand why I was feeling such a sort of, you know, what all this sort of emotional pain was about and everything. And I got this image, this little flash of a beautiful little bear. But I've just got him over there on the mantelpiece. He was a little cast iron bear money box I was given as a child, and I love him. He's very firm, very grounded. And he flashed into my mind, this standing bear. And I just thought, oh, this is my mind just playing tricks, you know, it's just, you know, like little images come, and I try to go back inside and what's all this about, and trying to sense its shape, its colour, its form, you know, find an image. And I was struggling, and again this bear came into my mind, and it happened two or three times. And of course, by that stage, trusting my inner self as focusing has taught me to do, I stopped and I thought, ah, let's give this image some space. I have no idea what it's about, but it's come. And I gave this image of a bear some space. And into my mind, as clear as the bell, the words came, I can't bear it. It's such a beautiful little example of how, you know, our mind uses imagery and even puns to explain. And when I found that phrase, it was absolutely clear that's what I was feeling, that there was something about this difficult relationship, and something in me just felt, I cannot bear it. Yeah. And it was such a relief to sort of put my finger on that. My whole body shifted and yes, that's the feeling. So you might think that's a sort of grim place to end up, to realise there's something you can't bear. But actually it wasn't. It was a sense of relief that something in me felt it had been heard and seen and acknowledged. And that is the main thing you're getting at with focusing, that you're able to give acknowledgement and let something breathe in there, and then it can move forward. Then it can find its sort of living forward energy that Jenlyn talks about.
Even if it's very painful.
Well, you see, as soon as you've got some way of being with it, there's more than just the pain. You're slightly bigger than it.
Yeah.
There's you around it. So this is where it's very focusing is so beautifully consonant with Buddhist practice and theory, because in Buddhism you might know there's this idea that you're not a fixed self, that you're always in flow, and there isn't a sort of fixed entity there. There's always the process of change. And in focusing also, you say, well, actually, I'm not the pain, that there is this pain sort of in me and flowing through me. Yeah. But and sometimes it gets stuck. So the focusing process will help you sort of just give space to it and for it to unstick. And something can move forward there. As soon as, ah, it feels like this. It feels like I can't bear something. And I just had this feeling, ah, there's something moving forward there. And then it can flow forward, and you can get perhaps more of a sense what's inside you that needs that attention and needs that expression begins to find a new a new sort of way of living and being inside you. Certainly in that session for me, I would have moved forward and found ways to give that one space and to let it live and breathe, and it will have shifted and I'd have felt much better afterwards.
Yeah.
And not just felt better, I would have felt better because I was better. That's the thing. Things have shifted and changed in that inner world. So really the whole process is that you're becoming more and more able to hold whatever's in you. And it can be quite contradictory things, that there'll be some joy and happiness about something and at the same time some doubt or struggle with it. You know, we're very, very rich. We can hold more than one experience. And very often we don't give ourselves that much space to realize, oh, there's many facets to this, and to really be able to hold them. So it's like a kind of increasing our ability to welcome whatever's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you said earlier, Barry, that you run a guest house. Mm-hmm. And I expect you know the Rumi poem, The Guest House.
Oh, yes.
Yes, it's very famous. Everybody, you know, lots of people love that and use it as to help this idea of let's welcome what's in us. Mm-hmm. This being human is a guest house. Yeah. And so I think focusing for me is the practice that is most aligned to finding a sort of inner relationship with whatever's there, that I can welcome it. And that spills out to what happens outside me, because, you know, if I can welcome everything inside me, then actually I can welcome everything outside me, because what's outside me is having an inner effect. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. Okay, well, we've talked about Buddhist practice and touched on meditation as well. What would you say is the difference between meditation and focusing? Because they're both in very much embodied experiences, aren't they?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I know that as people, you know, focusers who meditate often ask themselves this question. I think the difference is around inner relationship. So classically in meditation, if you have some thoughts or feelings or impulses coming your way, you might just acknowledge it, see it's there, label it even, and the image is of letting it pass like a cloud in a blue sky. I think that's a very common approach in meditation. In focusing, you're doing a slightly, almost the opposite, really. You're saying, well, there's the cloud. Let me become absolutely fascinated by the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, you're recognizing that you're probably swamped by the cloud, or you're sort of merged and, you know, you're probably right in the middle of the cloud sometimes, and you just think, oh my goodness, here I am, you know, I can't see beyond this. So what you're doing is developing a relationship with what's there. You're turning towards it very, very fully. You're saying hello to it. You're even more subtly than that, you're seeing if it's all right to say hello to it. So you're kind of letting it speak to you from its perspective, or you're feeling it. Well, how does it feel? Does it want my attention? Does it not?
Mm-hmm.
I use the metaphor of people walking into a room. You know, if you're sitting in a room and somebody comes through the door, you know, you'll sort of probably, as they come to the door, you'll, without thinking, you'll probably be picking up on how they are. And are you going to bounce up to them and say, hello, or are you going to give them a bit more space, or they look a bit sad, so you'll just be a little bit more tentative? You know, it's like that. You're developing this ability to really relate to what is inside you in a way from its perspective as well as from yours. So you're not in charge in the way that you are in meditation, where you might decide, oh, I'm going to let this go, or I'm going to do this, or I'm going to go and breathe more in my body. In focusing, you're just being present with, and you're giving tremendous space and tremendous respect to whatever comes.
Yeah.
And letting it sort of tell you what is needed. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes
sense. It's all about inner relationship, which of course is there to some extent in meditation. It's just incredibly more subtle and developed in the focusing practice. Perhaps I should just add one thing about that, that some people, of course, in their meditation are already doing this. So if people listening are meditators and they say, oh, but I do that anyway, I say hello in this very gentle, welcoming place, then I think that is the case. You know, people, it's not cut and dried, really. And I know when I'm focusing, sometimes I go into a very wordless place that feels like meditation. So they are quite close as well.
I'm just thinking of an experience I had two or three years ago. I'd been on two or three week retreats at Gaia House, and the first two were absolutely lovely. I had some great experiences. And then the third one, about 3 or 4 days in, I woke up in this really shocking mood. And then it was compacted by the fact that, how can this be happening? I'm supposed to be having a great time, you know, I'm on retreat. And and I just remember having this really sort of burning sensation in my chest of indignation, and it was almost like a furnace. But I recognised what I needed to do was just really, it was actually quite difficult to actually touch that at times because it was so strong. But I'd go away and come back and just feel around it and gradually sort of. But that was all my focus. That was the thing that needed my attention, and just gradually going back and having a look at it. And so in a sense, I think I was maybe more in focusing in that way than
that's what I mean. In meditation, meditators will often turn towards experience and give it space. And I think focusing has got a lot to teach us meditators about how to do that. It's got such a sort of understanding about it. But just what you were saying, it's also incredibly natural. Like you knew, didn't you? Something in you knew, oh, it just needs this kind of attention.
Yes.
It isn't something stuck on or extra. It's something we do naturally. We naturally turn inside and say, oh, what's this that's bothering me? And try to feel it. Yeah. And in fact, I often like to point to that natural process. We do it even if you're sitting in a cafe and someone says, do you want, you know, ice cream or cake for dessert? You'll sort of pause, you'll go within for a second or two, and you'll go, I think I'll have fruit instead. You know, so there's something in us that knows. We touch base with something inside us. But we tend to do it very quickly. So in a focusing, we slow that down and really listen to what's wanted and how's it wanted. So it's a natural process, but it's one that we slow down and really begin to see how we make those decisions, how it is or what it is that's needed.
So just taking that analogy a bit further with the ice cream and the chocolate cake, where normally you're saying we react in a sense rather than respond. So are you saying we don't give ourselves enough time to touch base with what we really want? So are you saying that focusing can help us make better decisions?
Absolutely, absolutely right. It's classic, you know, if you're painting your room or something like that or decorating your house, there's so many decisions to make. Or you're in the shops, you're trying to buy something. Which do I get? Which shirt? Which colour? And the ability just to go inside and to really check in with what, and here really, what does the body say? So you're looking for this fresh, kind of good feeling in your body, a sense of rightness, a sense, oh, this fits. This is what feels right. And it's that sense of rightness that focusing is getting at. It's getting at this, you know, where you can relax and, oh, this fits for me. Like when you're resonating with a word and you're saying, oh, that word fits for me. Or, oh, this is what it's about. You know, like when I had the bear, oh, this is what it's all about.
Yeah.
And so that sense of rightness, of fit, is incredibly pleasurable. And you do it again and again as you're focusing. And to build up a stronger and stronger sense of that, you develop a huge amount of trust in your inner life and your bodily responses. So, you know, you're looking at what colour should I paint the wall, and, well, my head is telling me that this is the right one, it would go with everything, but, you know, actually my whole body's going, oh, resonating with this different colour, you know.
That's an important point, actually. So it's this sort of sense of rightness or appropriateness. Because, for example, you might have a very strong felt sense that you want to have a whole bar of chocolate, but that might not be the best thing for you in some way. So is it to actually, in that example, to actually think, well, does that feel right?
Yes. Now, this is such a helpful question, Barry, because what focusing talks about is becoming merged and identified with one particular part, or one particular aspect of oneself. So if you're going, oh, I just want that chocolate, I'm going to have that chocolate, you know, this is what feels right, it's quite likely that it doesn't have the sense of fresh wholeness that you get with a focusing felt sense. So you'd realise, actually, I'm sort of grasping and greedily wanting this. There's a sort of bit of me that's really into it in a way that doesn't feel completely whole
Yep.
So you begin to recognise what's coming from an aspect of yourself and what's coming from the whole of you. So with the chocolate, it might be that there'll be a very genuine need in there, perhaps for comfort or for some sort of energy or whatever it is, pleasure that's driving the need for the chocolate. So you can give that space, and you're stepping into a sort of wholer sense of yourself and saying, well, is this what I want overall right now? You know, is there another something in me that really wants just a little bit something? And maybe it wants empathy, or it wants a bit of love. Is there something else there,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's coming through? Or something in me that just really wants health and really wants to balance what I do? So you're much more able to sort of say, well, what, step back from all of that, what feels right for me right now? And it still might be to have the chocolate, but you've got a sort of different feeling around it. You don't feel so sort of driven or in the grip of things. So basically you've disentangled, you've unmerged from the thing that had you in its grip. Ah, it's there, I can say hello to that urge, but I don't have to follow it.
So the felt sense is, in a sense, an integrative feeling, in a sense. That
yes, it is a wholeness. It's a sort of fresh, whole, as we say, living forward energy. It's often called a felt shift as well, that you definitely feel a shift in the whole, your whole way that you're holding and being with something.
Okay.
And then in a very clear sense, the felt shift is when I described you walking down the street, recalling, oh, there's something that I should have done, and your whole body's tensed up. And when you remember it, you go, ah, oh, that's what it was. You know, and your whole body relaxes. There's a tremendously obvious shift in that moment. Yeah, the whole of you can sigh and go, oh, now I know.
Okay, well, then what are its benefits? What do you get out of focusing?
Well, I think that sense of knowing that we've just been talking about is a really key one. So the sort of, it might be a little knowing about this or that, or, you know, the thing about moving house and just, this is what's bothering me. So it might be a particular knowing, but I think it's a wider knowing. It's a kind of knowing that you are, I am part of something much more mysterious and wonderful and sort of, you know, more unfathomable, really, than we'll ever know. It's just, you know, I think, in other words, our sense of interconnectedness. I mean, there's a really beautiful quote I absolutely love by Jen Lynn. Shall I share it with you now? That he says, he's talking about experience, and he says, experience is a myriad richness. We think more than we can say. We feel more than we can think. We live more than we can feel, and there is much more still.
Oh, that's brilliant.
This idea that there's much more still, this kind of connected sort of sense of you know, oneself as a process of connecting and with the universe, with everything. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. So there's a coming alive, there's an aliveness there, and an ability just to, as I said before, to sort of welcome and hold whatever comes towards you.
Okay.
You know, inside you or outside you. Yeah.
Does it have any limitations?
I should have actually added that I think that also has a health benefit. I think the freshness, that good feeling, is very much a healthy, holistic thing. Limitations, I would say the limitation can sometimes be in our ability to be with. So it can take, some people absolutely get it immediately, the sense of, you know, giving something space and finding an image or a body sense, and it just totally makes sense to them. Other people really struggle, you know, just teaching it, as I have done for a number of years, it's evident that sometimes people are so used to being in their inner world and being very much under the sway of an inner critic or an inner advisor telling you should do this, you should do that, or criticizing what's happening. But of course, those are all different voices which all need their own space and attention. And sometimes people are very in the grip of one of those and find it very hard to just be with what's there and let it be. And sometimes they're always giving themselves advice or telling themselves it should be different, or, and it's quite hard just to say, well, this is what's here in the inner world, and let me really respect that and sort of find a way of letting it live and breathe. Yeah.
What is your understanding of the middle way, Lochana, and how does it relate to what we've been talking about today?
We could almost start again with this question, Barry. It's such a big one, really. But what a lovely place to finish as well. So the middle way and how it relates to focusing. I think I've got two answers, really. One is a bit philosophical. Should I do that one first?
Go for it.
Okay. Well, for me, it's what in Buddhism is called no self or non-self, the idea that there isn't a fixed bit of me. And there I find focusing an incredibly useful practice because it's always sort of reminding me that there's just, I have all these different things inside me, something which feels this, something which feels that, something that wants this or that, but none of it's really me. You know, I can be with any of that. So it's not like I'm just a sort of flow. It's hard to say what you are, but just there's this broader sense of just being with or awareness.
Yeah.
That's much bigger than anything inside it. So in that philosophical way, it really fits for me with the idea of Jenvin says, you know, there's a contentless self. You know, in a certain way, it's full of different things, but it's just like energies or bubbles in the sea. You know, they come to the top and they burst and you're just left with the waves. I don't know if that makes any sense on it.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And it's not just Buddhist philosophy as well. I mean, a lot of neuroscience and present day philosophy like complexity theory all backs up this idea of not self.
That's it.
And you mentioned another way of looking at the middle way.
Yes, I think in a very practical way. I think very often someone will say to you, well, how do you feel? And they sort of expect one answer, like you feel good or bad or something. And I think focusing is just this lovely process of knowing about complexity, sort of saying, oh, well, you know, inside me I've got something feels good and something feels bad, and I can hold both. Yeah. So in that way I'm sort of often in the middle. I'm sort of sitting there saying, well, there's this and there's that. And so if somebody around me is upset or cross or, you know, annoyed, I can actually do that for them as well. I'm like, okay, so you've got this frustrated bit in you and something in you is really angry and there's something else, this thing, and there's more, you know, and there's something else in you probably that's different from that. So, again, I don't get so overwhelmed by the experience. I can sort of stand there and kind of just say, oh, here we are. We've got this and we've got that.
That's great. And my last question, Lojana, how would people go about finding more about your work and what you're doing and focusing in general?
Yes. Well, I think for the focusing in general, it's just tap into the web, British Focusing Association, and also just tap in focusing and you're probably all focusing will come up as the American site as well, the Focusing Institute. They both hold lots of wonderful information about focusing. The British Focusing Association will also have a list of all the teachers, and you can see someone who's close to you, and it's a wonderful website, so very well worth visiting just to see who's teaching and what courses are running. Yep. So that's a good way. Also, there's Jendlin's book called Focusing, just Focusing. There's Anne Weiser-Cornell's book I mentioned earlier called The Power of Focusing. Yep. She's also written a wonderful book called The Radical Acceptance of Everything, which is just a wonderful title. Again, perhaps, you know, follows up in a bit more detail, something from the other books. There's a book by David Rome, who's actually a meditator as well. It's called Your Body Knows the Answer. So there's several books out there about focusing. And best of all, find a focusing teacher or a focusing course and really learn it with another person. I think that's the way to really progress with it. So I would recommend all of that. I do run courses myself sometimes, and my website's lifeatwork.co.uk. But I'm also teaching quite a bit of mindfulness these days. I've got a job teaching students mindfulness at Cambridge University. And, of course, I'm very much enjoying bringing this relational aspect into that work. You know, it's about meditation, but it's also about how you relate to your inner life in this very warm, welcoming way. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for talking to me today, Lojana. It's been absolutely fascinating.
Thank you very much, Barry. Thank you very much for the invitation.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.